Well, Chicago's always been known as one of this country's greatest cities and one of the most segregated. And it seems every year the city moves further in that direction. Whether it be a lack of resources, jobs, opportunities, the wealth gap widens and inequalities lead to poverty, which lead to problems like crime and violence. So what can be done? Is it government programs? Is it new political leadership? Is it paradigm shift? Is it private investment? Well, first, we need a plan. And the Chicago Urban League has one. They just put out the blueprint for an equitable Chicago, a 10-year plan. Among other things, it takes on how to bridge the wealth gap and address structural racism and inequality. Sherry Runner is the president and CEO of the Chicago Urban League, established in 1916. The Chicago Urban League is celebrating its 100th birthday. Yes. The organization works for economic, educational, and social progress for African Americans. And Sherry Runner is my guest tonight at the big table. Ms. Runner, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. All right, so let's talk about this blueprint. This is something you guys have been working on. Why put out a 10-year plan on this? Why does the Chicago Urban League have to do this?
So I think one of the things that you said when you introduced me is that we're celebrating 100 years. And one of the things that we want to make sure that we're saying is we're commemorating 100 years of service to the Chicago community. We have made progress as African Americans in the nation and in the city, but the actuality is that progress is fraught with a lot of problems, and we still have a lot to do. And we say commemorating our 100th year here in the city of Chicago. And what do we need to do to really make some changes at this point as we look at what we want to have happen in 10 years. We want to say this is a watershed moment. We're looking at a lot of different things happening in the city, and we need to say, where do we want to be in 10 years?
I mean, you know, when I kind of mentioned at the top about the idea of it being a segregated city, and it seems to be getting worse, you know, more and more we see opportunities, resources, and that wealth gap widen. Right. Why is that? Why is that happening in Chicago? Why in a big city like this with so many opportunities, why is it that we're seeing some that get more and some be left behind?
Well, I think the important thing that we need to talk about is that segregation in and of itself is not bad. So African Americans, Jewish people, Greek people living in their own communities is not so bad. But the issue is that allocation of resources when you talk about segregated communities is what is important. And as it relates to African American communities, those resources are not flowing there. And so that impacts schools, education, which is one of our most important pillars, jobs, wealth creation, another thing. How do we deal with that? Those are things that we need to do to or pay attention to in order to change the trajectory of those communities.
Well, I mean, those communities are not unlike other communities in Chicago. I mean, you've seen with the Latino communities as well, and some other areas in Chicago just not being developed or not moving at the same rate as other places in the city. And I just always wonder, and you guys broke it down with education, jobs, and development.
Right.
I mean, is finding solutions in those three areas, you feel like in 10 years you can see a change, you can see a cultural change where we might be seeing some growth in areas that we hadn't before?
Well, as with any business, the important part about a plan is the idea that we're going to hold ourselves accountable and say, these are things that we need to see changes in to make sure that the city changes. The fact that the city of Chicago is 30% African American, 30% Hispanic, 30% white, that when you have a large percentage of your population struggling, if you don't pay attention to these things, the city begins to die as it would be a part of your body. You would not neglect your body that way. So it's important for us to make some real decisions about what we're going to do and how we're going to address the issues that face our communities.
There's so many things on the table, and we'll talk through it this hour. But you do call it a blueprint for an equitable Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
You go out of your way to talk about inequalities, almost bridging the wealth gap. I mean, the gap, not necessarily fixing violence or addressing crime or other issues. It really does start with the idea of sort of, you know, everybody on an equal playing field.
Right. Well, so we think about three things in this plan. One is changing the narrative. What does it mean to have inequity? And how do we talk about the fact that when we talk about African-American communities, we expect people to say, oh, because you're black people or because this is African-Americans, that those things are not, we don't care about them.
Right.
Because that's what we expect of black people. So we have to change the narrative.
Like the narrative in the media, you mean? Or like just in general? Like just the way
in
we
general,
are?
Wow. In general. And I think that we can see that as a result of our political discussion right now. What does that look like? How do we think about inequity in our society? And that's a baseline issue that we need to start talking about.
Do you think that that's is that difficult to do when you want to change a narrative? I mean, I'm trying to think about how to change people's perceptions or people's behaviors or attitudes. I mean, that all plays into the narrative. I mean, what can you do to change the narrative so it plays into more of the idea of the things that are in the report?
Well, you know what's interesting? As we've started to roll this plan out and as we've started to talk to people, there was a comment because, you know, social media is so anonymous and what people talk about. One of the comments that came out is, if I'm poor and white, I'm out of sight. But that really is the issue. If you're poor, what happens to you in our society? And how do we talk about what's the difference between being poor and black and what that means? And how do you say to someone that I need to understand the difference between being black in America and being white in America?
Yeah.
And it's not a matter of that one is better or more worthy than the other. It's a matter of really talking about what are the issues and how do we start to break this down and have a conversation about race.
Or, yeah, just understand where other people are coming from. That not everybody thinks like you do.
No, no, not everybody thinks like I do, for
or
sure.
Anybody, right? I mean, but that's, I mean, I think that at the end of the day, when you see these political fights burst on social media or talks, you know, or sort of just really incendiary talk about race, it feels like it's people just won't accept that there are other ways to think about the things that are in this world.
Well, and so that's part two of what this this plan talks about, which is really important. And it's a shift. For 100 years, the Urban League has been really working on dealing with the symptoms of inequity and structural inequity. And those are things like the violence that we're seeing right now, the poverty that we're seeing right now, the family fracture that we're seeing right now. And those are a result of a lot of policies and practices that have occurred over the last 50, 60, 100 years and what that does to our community. And so now we want to talk about how are we going to change that policy practice? What are we going to do to deal with the root causes?
Sherry Runner is the president and CEO of the Chicago Urban League. She's my guest tonight at the big table. We're talking about their new blueprint for an equitable Chicago, a 10-year plan. We'll take a break. We'll come right back. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. My guest at the big table tonight, Sherry Runner. She's the president and CEO of the Chicago Urban League, which has been around for 100 years, commemorating its 100th commemoration. No birthdays.
Yes.
No celebrations in that. The organization works for economic, educational, and social progress for African Americans. And they just put out a brand new study, which is a blueprint for an equitable Chicago, a 10-year plan. And I find it interesting, too, because it's a plan that, I mean, there's been a lot of fervor or clamoring for institutions like the Urban League and other places to step up and come up with solutions for some of the things that are ailing the African-American community, violence, crime, poverty, and this seems to be it.
Well, I mean, I think that's the important part about that is what's ailing the African-American community is about symptoms. People look at violence. People look at poverty. People say, you know, why haven't the African-American community or the people done more to pull themselves up? That doesn't exist with the structural barriers that are inhibiting people from doing that. And it's interesting because it's one of those things that we talk about and we do not allow anybody to say that this is really an important impediment to people achieving. And it's very
These
different.
Sort of structural barriers.
These structural barriers.
Well, what are they? What are the structural barriers? I mean, if we sort of break down, what are the things that are keeping African-Americans from being in a situation where they can have an equitable Chicago?
Well, let's look at it. Let's say, you know, the Chicago Urban League has been around for 100 years. Plessy versus Ferguson was separate but equal. Jim Crow was there to stop people from moving forward. Then there was contract buying as people moved north during the Great Migration. Mm-hmm. That stopped people from attaining and maintaining wealth. One of the big things
that was, and Natalie Moore was in, we talked about that. She's the author of The South Side, about the idea of you didn't actually buy the property.
Yes.
You bought almost a contract from landlords. It was renting, but it was not. It
right.
was essentially a deal that you couldn't actually accrue wealth. You didn't own anything. You couldn't sell it.
Right. And the number one way that people accrue and transfer wealth generationally is through real estate. So if we fast forward and to the 50s when we had the FHA and redlining, we know that African Americans couldn't own homes, didn't get into the real estate market until we got into blockbusting when whites flew from the city. And then we had in the 2000s, we're talking about reverse redlining and predatory lending. So a lot of African-American families bought real estate in various different times of the top of the bubble and then had no wealth to transfer to their families. This is really crucial. This is a part of how do we make people feel like they're a part of the fabric of the American society, and what do we do about that?
That's so interesting. When you talk about structural barriers and we get to the nuts and bolts of it, the real estate world that African Americans have lived in has always, just in the situations you just talked about for 60 years, it's always been behind the curve. What happened with the market crash in 2008, it was because of subprime lending,
right?
And it was mostly focused on people who didn't have wealth, and they were the people who were left to clean up the mess. I mean, it seems to be a cyclical nature.
It is cyclical, and that's just one piece of
right.
it. But we can talk about, you know, what happens with the war on drugs. What happened with who was the most likely to be arrested, mass incarceration, how families were torn apart. And then we look back and we say, you know, people look at the African-American community and say, these are issues that are your fault. Well, it kind of is a part of, it's not kind of, it really is an issue about how do we characterize and stigmatize and stereotype African-Americans. But these are pretty structural. These are things that are ingrained in our society and that we have to really think about how do we, moving forward, especially as our demographic changes, how do we figure out how to change that?
Okay, so, and we could spend the whole hour talking about those barriers. I mean, like you just mentioned, you mentioned all those things, and I think a lot of our listeners already know what the barriers are. In this blueprint, what you're talking about, I mean, you're talking about let's start now.
Right.
Let's think about what are we doing for the short term, the long term? What are we doing in 10 years, 20 years? Well, what can we do to overcome the structural barriers or at least break them down so that African Americans can have the same opportunities that other people have? And then at the end of the day, it all helps everybody because that makes a more robust economy and everybody is on the up. So when we talk about it, let's talk about education as the first part of what you guys are talking about in this study.
And so the only thing that I want to start with is I would suggest that not everybody knows. I think that they understand that they don't understand that there is an issue about the barriers that are stopping African Americans from achieving in society as the rest of us would. But let's look at education. When we say in our report that we would definitely like for graduation rates to increase by 15%, we know that African Americans who go to high schools that are predominantly African American, the graduation rate is 50%. But the graduation rate for whites who go to schools is 87%.
Okay.
And we know that when African Americans are in schools that are primarily African American, the resources that are targeted towards those schools decline. We have been fighting for the last 9 years with the state of Illinois about how do we equitably allocate resources to make sure that those that are under-resourced get those resources into those schools to make sure that those children get graduated.
Somewhere along the line, and I guess it would have been in the 90s, the school system determined at one point or another that, okay, we're not going to be able to do that.
Right.
You know, there was this thing where we're not going to be able to spread resources around. So they came up with selective enrollment and other lottery-type schools to bring people of different classes together so that they would have a more integrated opportunity and that graduation rate might go up. Is that not enough? Is that not working as evidence?
It's not working.
Why is it not working?
Because the resources that are being allocated to these schools, and if you look at the schools on the south and the west sides, and you look at the environments that our children are going to schools in, it's abominable. And we need to...
So they've been left behind.
No, absolutely.
There's still people going to those schools and they've been left behind.
They're not getting what they need to in order to achieve in this economy, because education is the first step and then jobs is the next step. So if I'm graduating from high school without the skills and resources that I need to get the jobs that I need...
You're already two steps behind.
And we can't continue to have that happen. Can't lose another generation of children.
At some point or another, and I'd love to have continued the conversation on this show just about thinking about how to shift and how to improve schooling, mm-hmm. or just the way that Chicago does schools, because over the years, so many different politicians and people who are in charge of Chicago Public Schools have tried different methods to try to remove the structural barriers, but it just never works.
But the resources are when you have generational poverty, when you need kids that need extra resources with regard to social workers and
right.
all kinds of things that improve schooling, they're not there. So we're behind. That is the problem.
Right.
That is the issue.
It's interesting because, you know, I mean, all of the issues that are talked about in this study are issues that are on the forefront right now in the news.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see with Chicago Public Schools and CTU talking about teachers and cutbacks and principals getting their budgets. We're just off of the biggest closing of public schools in this country's history, just, 5 years ago?
Right.
It just doesn't seem that we are moving in a direction that is trying to rethink the way we do things. It almost feels like we just continue to roll it down the hill and hope for the best.
Well, what we know is what we're doing is not working. And so what's the most important thing about what we know is that we need to change what we're doing, and we need to be open to the discussion about how do we make sure that this very important segment of our economy, of our population, is taken care of as everybody else. When we think about what's equity, when we think about what people need to do, it's not about taking away anything from anyone else. It's about making sure that everybody has the same resources.
Sherry Runner is the president and CEO of the Chicago Urban League. They just put out the blueprint for an equitable Chicago, a 10-year plan. We're talking about it and talking about how structural barriers how we can get rid of structural barriers moving forward. And this plan kind of takes a look at that. We'll continue the conversation after the news with Rob Martyr here on The Download, 720 WGN. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up 9 o'clock, Ron Burke's going to join us from the Active Transportation Alliance. We'll talk about bike lanes, construction, right-of-way, how to avoid tragedies like we saw earlier this week. A 21-year-old woman was hit by a semi-truck at a construction zone when a bike lane was essentially roadblocked. It's a terrible story, and it doesn't look like there's any end in sight because each day the trucks line up at the same site. There was a follow-up story to it. It's kind of maddening. So we'll talk with Ron about what can be done in that situation. And then also Coach Pat Fitzgerald, the Northwestern Wildcats, talking about what that team, Chicago's Big Ten football team, can do to repeat the success of last year and maybe take a step forward, which would be pretty amazing since they were 10-2. I mean, that's pretty unbelievable for Northwestern. But right now we continue our conversation with Sherry Runner. She's the president and CEO of the Chicago Urban League, which is celebrating or commemorating its 100th anniversary. And their plan, they just put out Blueprint for an Equitable Chicago, a 10-year plan. You know, it's so interesting. All this kind of stuff about, you know, identifying what the structural barriers are for this city, for the African-American community, but it's for all communities. There are some that are very specific to African-Americans. But to identify what it is, whatever that barrier is, and come up with solutions, that's a mighty task. Because it, for whatever reason, it includes change. People have to change. We have to shift paradigm. We have to think differently. I mean, it's more than just putting stats on a piece of paper.
No, and that's the most important thing about this plan, is that it is a parallel plan. The work that goes on about handling those symptoms that we see every single day, the violence, the unemployment, the poverty, the generational poverty, what do we do about that? That has to continue. But at the same time, we have to recognize is that if we continue to do the same things that we have been doing for the last 50 to 100 years, we will not change things. And this is what's important. We've said right now, we have to put a line in the sand. We have to say 10 years from now, as every business would do, what are the goals that we want to achieve? How do we want to change this trajectory? This is not acceptable. Where are we going from here?
For you, you're a native of Chicago, huh?
Yes.
Chicago,
mm-hmm.
Native Chicagoan. I just think, you know, are we at a crisis point in the way that this is the worst that it's been? You know, I'm trying to think, you know, do we have to think in those kind of grand statements to get people's attention that we are at a crisis point, that it is red alert time for some of the areas and neighborhoods in the city?
We are at a crisis point, but we've been at a crisis point in several different neighborhoods all across the city for years. Why it's a crisis point right now is because the violence is becoming an issue, not just for those neighborhoods where most of the crime occurs, but because of the fact that it can seep out of those neighborhoods. And that all of a sudden creates a red flag for everybody that lives in
everybody.
The city. And that points to the fact that when you have a significant portion of your population that is just surviving, maybe just surviving and not thriving, that the whole city can't thrive. And that's critical. That's crucial. And we have to live up to the fact that it's, you know, when you talk about this, when you think about the fact that it's, and if you say that it's just African Americans and what they're doing and what they're not doing, then you are belittling the fact that this is a part of the community and the society that you live in.
The whole city of Chicago.
The whole city of Chicago.
I'm interested because you mentioned a lot of those things, and I even at the beginning sort of said, well, you know, is the wealth gap widens, inequalities lead to poverty, which lead to problems like crime and violence. But these are all symptoms of something. They're all interconnected.
Yes, they are.
There's nothing that sort of leads to one or the other. They all seem to work in this strange, very negative ecosystem.
Well, I mean, think about it. You under-educate people who can't get jobs, who therefore cannot create wealth in their community. You think about the fact that the average net worth in the nation for African-American families is $5,000 after the recession. The average net worth for white families is $113,000. Now, in that average net worth, of course, are 1% people. But the fact of the matter that the divide is so wide.
It's so wide.
It's so wide. And that you have to think about what happens to people when they are working hard. And this is, they are working hard. And they need to be able to see a path out and not feel like they're disenfranchised.
One of the things that's rarely talked about when it comes to the violence, at least it hits in the media, is that it's not, you know, it's a very, they'll talk about it being in pocket neighborhoods.
Right.
This is where the crime and the violence and the shooting numbers that we see usually come from one or two areas. And it really is, when I talk about ecosystem, negative ecosystem, that's what's sort of, that's at play.
Right.
As you just referenced. there is money being exchanged, and that's the protection of that money that's causing that violence.
That's exactly right. So if I can't get a job doing what is a part of the legal economy, I'm going to have to find a way to support my family in an illegal economy or a underground economy. And those underground and illegal economies are high risk, and
they people want to protect it.
Yes. And so we need to figure out a way, because what we hear every year when we do our legislative conference with the children that are out there that are a part of this, they say, I don't want to be a part of this. What I really want to do is have a job and move forward like everybody else. This is not something that is endemic to the African-American population. This is something that is endemic to the state of our economy and the state of poverty and the state of segregation and this lack of resources. So we know that if we change that narrative at the same time that we deal with the symptoms, we can absolutely change this.
And a lot of what's in the study or the blueprint, I mean, it is the Urban League is for the economic, educational, and social progress of African Americans, but it is very relatable,
right,
to other groups. It almost falls along class lines in the way that we're really talking about poor, middle class, rich, working class, those kind of things, as opposed to just race.
Oh, absolutely. But the issue is that when you look at an African American, you can identify them as an African American. And we have to, you know, so no matter what your status in life is, you know, you never know what they are, but you know you're African American.
Right.
And so these issues are very central to the life of an African American. And we see that all the time. And we need to start to have this conversation about race in a very straightforward way. It's hurtful. It's hard. People don't want to deal with it, but we need to deal with it to change the trajectory of our.
Let's do it here. Let's do it on the show. We'll put some stuff together.
Let's do it.
I love it. Let's do it.
Okay.
I think it is a hard conversation, but we should do it here.
Okay.
Okay. So what has to be in place for this plan to work? Is it straight up like the city of Chicago has to allocate resources, private investment? What is it about your plan that what's the fuel behind the blueprint?
Well, it's all of those things. Everybody has to get on board. Our corporate citizens need to be aware of their responsibility in making sure that the city of Chicago functions. Our government needs to make sure that they are allocating resources to make sure that schools work, that investment is made in our communities. Our citizens need to be engaged, mm-hmm, and not just decide that African-American communities are written off. And African-American communities need to come to the table and say, we demand what we need to have in order to have our children and our communities thrive. So it's everybody coming to the table and saying that this is important and that we need to make sure that this happens.
It's interesting, too, because when you talk about employment, one of the areas is youth work, and it's an area in Chicago that has seen better days when it comes to summer jobs, other places that's been cut away.
Right.
But you see a lot of companies that'll stand up and say, I will take this on, and they do it in an altruistic kind of way. And it feels to me that for this to take hold, for us to sort of start a new day in Chicago, it has to be less altruistic and more normal. If
right.
that makes sense. I don't know. I'm not using the right words, but it has to be more like that is just what we all do.
Right. Well, you know what we have to do is that, you know, an entry-level employee that comes in your door who doesn't necessarily have all the skills that you may want, you're going to have to invest in that kid. And what we're going to really have to do is say, what investment we make in these communities, the return on investment is going to be way greater than what we're doing right now. And that's the most important thing.
Sherry Runner is the president and CEO of the Chicago Urban League. The Blueprint for an Equitable Chicago, a 10-year plan, is on their website. They're commemorating their 100th anniversary this year. Sherry, thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it, and we'd love to have you back.
Thank you so much.
Coming up 9 o'clock, Pat Fitzgerald. How great is that? Coach Fitzgerald going to join us coming up after the 9:30 news. How cool, man. I didn't notice. I was doing all the prep for it. And, they were 10-2 last year. I forgot. It's like the news cycle is so fast. Yeah. The sports cycle, too, where you're just like, I couldn't tell you anything about last year's college football season. Who won? Alabama won?
Clemson?
Clemson beat Alabama?
LSU? One of those. Can't remember.
West Virginia? Is it Marshall? I think Marshall won it all last year.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah, we could just do the next 5 minutes where we just name a bunch of mid-level colleges for the joke. Yeah, but Northwestern, yeah, they got up to 13 at one point. I forgot about it. And it's so exciting because WGN Radio here, we broadcast all the games on the radio. Dave Ennett.
Man, yeah.
It's awesome.
Adam Hoge on the sidelines.
It's so great. I tuned in a couple times last year, and I was like, this is awesome. It's top-notch. And to have Northwestern football on WGN Radio, it's a pretty big deal, especially since Northwestern, we'll see if they can make the jump. They have a tough schedule. But they had a tough schedule last year, and they just lost to Iowa and Michigan State. And that's one of the things I like about college football, the strange way that it's warped itself into if you lose once, you may be out.
Yeah, unless it's maybe in the first couple of games, then you can
and,
come back.
And also your strength of schedule. Like some of the big schools, they have to play such big teams. Like on the if you're a school in the SEC, Southeastern Conference, you can be afford to lose one. But like if Northwestern, it always blows my mind if you think this way, and the same for Illinois or any of those. If they run the table, if they go undefeated, because of the conference that they're in, they are automatically playing for a national championship. So it's not like it used to be where there'd be a bunch of, white guys with stogies in the back of a room going, nah, I don't really like Northwestern. They're out. Like, because the Big Ten is such a big conference, it's SEC, Big Ten, what is it, Big 12 maybe, Pac-10, ACC. Is there even a Big East anymore?
Big 12.
Yeah, the Big 12, I said that one. So that's about it. So if any of those, essentially, if you go undefeated in the Big Ten, which is arguably the biggest, the SEC and the Big Ten, you've got a chance. So if you're Northwestern, I know it's far-fetched to say you're going to go undefeated in any sport, but the idea that if they ran the table, it's kind of mind-blowing that the Northwestern Wildcats here in Evanston, Illinois, if they won every game they played, they could be playing for a national championship.
Yeah, of course.
The Big Ten Conference, by the way, has 14 teams. Just wanted to pass that along.
Is Appalachian State still in it? We're still
I think
in the Big Ten?
That could become a 15th team, depending on how much money we can extract from them.
Is St. Olaf? St. Olaf's still in the Big Ten, right?
I think there's still one double A, yeah.
One double A.
Right. I don't know how they do in the power rankings.
Right.
Is that true? There are 15 teams now in the Big Ten?
No, 14, yeah.
Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, that looks like Maryland, Michigan, Michigan State, Minnesota, Nebraska, Northwestern, Ohio State, Penn State, Purdue, Rutgers, and yeah. Wisconsin.
Right. And then Johns Hopkins. That's in there. That's the last one.
14 teams. You have an East and West division.
Yeah, that's it. And I didn't see, I was looking at the schedule. They go on the road this year. Northwestern goes on the road to Ohio State, Michigan State, and Iowa. On the road. Those are away games. They got a second year quarterback. It could happen, but those are teams that are usually there. Yeah. Ohio State, I saw something that said Ohio State is the number one winningest. Like they did a rank, like a weird kind of best team of all time. Ohio State coming in at number one.
You mean
we put all the computers together and the computers all decided.
No, I think that was done by the Associated Press. I think they've been ranking teams, they jammed it in their supercomputer and they spit out that little thin strip of paper.
Right. And it's like the George Michael sports machine.
Who among us didn't watch that show religiously? I loved that show.
The fact that he would hit the button to start the highlight reel was probably the best. Best idea of all time from a production standpoint, and it showed that sportscasters could could do more than one thing at a time.
And he always had his clipboard with him.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's consult the sports machine.
Let's go to the sports machine.
Speaking of hitting buttons.